Smoke above the city flickered with explosions. In the quiet, they could all hear the distant gunfire and artillery. "Look, cousin, the human city falls. It is being eaten from underneath by a wretched hive of monsters which Hecabe controls. Rack will soon be overrun as well. So will other worlds, if Hecabe gains the use of your fleet." "No," Tharz said. "My fleet will burn the human ships out of the sky. We are not ignorant, Rajka. We have been watching, preparing. After my people destroy the human ships that currently approach, they will come for me. And then they will come for you. If you wish to see your bloodline survive, you need to consider..." Rajka shoved the tip of the sword into Tharz's shoulder and watched him scream as flesh sizzled. "You have no honor." Melody moved between them.
"Shipmaster,
you risk our homeworlds," she hissed down at Tharz in Sangheili. "All of them." "I am already on my home world right now," Tharz said with venom in his tone. Rajka pushed her aside with his free hand.
"Rajka," Melody begged him, "we can't let this happen. They've got minutes before the Jirulhanai arrive with the Sharkoi."
Tharz leaned back, satisfaction dripping from him. "The only thing you can do now is let me open communications with my fleet. Let me show you how great our power is as we destroy this thing that makes you cower. Then they will attack here in great numbers once they're done with this annoying alien threat. But at least you will die, knowing that your world is safe." "I will kill you before your people arrive," Rajka promised.
"We need to warn them what they're up against," Melody said to Rajka. "We need to let Tharz open communications."
Rajka snarled. This would just hand Tharz what he wanted. A second chance at them all. But then the image of Sanghelios burning dripped in the back of his mind.
No. He could not risk such a thing.
Tharz graciously spread his arms, then winced. The cauterized wound along his shoulder oozed Sangheili blood. "Give me the information to fight these new creatures, and I will be generous in the manner of your death." Rajka shoved Tharz toward the Spartans. "Open communications. Help his commanders if they'll listen. And if they survive to come for us, we will deal with them then." Tharz staggered forward, glee seemingly on his face, as the Spartans trained their weapons on him. He pointed toward a hologrip lying in the sand, a handheld comm projector used by the Covenant before the end of the war. "Here," he wheedled, slowly picking the device up and brushing it off. "I can make contact from here. I will bring my ships to bear on the threat, and then they will come here for me."
"Understand," Rajka called out to him. "These Sharkoi are no normal threat. You must listen to the envoy's words."
"Of course, of course." Tharz half scuttled to the side of a large rock, leaning against it while clutching his shoulder. Melody leaned over, talking to Tharz in measured but rapid tones as she brought him up to speed. Occasionally Tharz glanced back at Soraka, or nervously toward Rajka. "It would not be so difficult to stride over and stab that satisfied look out of his face," Rajka thought. Tharz finally activated the hologrip with a snap. The hologram of one of Tharz's commanders appeared over him, hovering in the desert air.
"Shipmaster, you are alive! The enemy approaches. Our defenses are ready. We are just minutes away from finishing repairs on our drives."
Tharz looked pleased with himself. "Begin targeting the human ships, Commander. I will have adjustments to battle strategy based on information just given to me. But we must not delay engagement. Shoot them out of the sky." The image of the captain flickered out, replaced with a feed from some stationary camera. possibly on the mountain peaks around Tharz's camp. Rajka took in the scene. 4 Sarakan ships flying over the mountains toward the Sangheili fleet, which was now just a handful of cruisers and corvettes. They were damaged, but well armed. In a few moments, Tharz's boasting would prove either true or empty. Everything hung on this. Elise heard something large and angry pounding at the blast doors leading into the bay. The last of the tunnels had been blown up to slow the Sharkoi down. The militia gunfire had faded away in spurts and screams. Every thud made her team jump. "Almost there," she murmured. They had the original warthog the Gauss cannon had been pulled from ready to go. The hybrid weapon lay on its side in the bed and was being assembled frantically by what was left of her team. They hadn't had time to mount it on anything. The doors creaked and bent inward. "There are no more militia out there," someone said, voice breaking. Elise's hands shook as she applied a last piece of solder from where she crouched on the rear bed. Smoke curled up past her nose. She looked over and saw the door bend further. Thick, gray fingers reached underneath the lip and the Sharkoi on the other side bellowed as it struggled to force the door up. The heavy blast door moved a half meter upward with a screech. "We have to go," the driver said. The warthog lurched forward. Elise yanked the soldering iron back just before she would have shorted out a circuit. "No, not yet," she shouted. "They're coming in," the driver shouted back. Rhodes ran over to another bench, pushing tools aside. "Do you think the Gauss cannon will be enough? It can only knock out the Forerunner machinery for a minute or so." "Yes. If we can get to the Jirohanai leader, it will be worth it." "We need to finish wiring this up," Elise said. Rhodes picked up a rifle from the table and fumbled around with it until it clicked. The bay door jerked upward again as the Sharkoi continued pulling at it. "Go!" Rhodes shouted. He aimed the rifle down at the door's lip and fired a burst. Bullets smacked the door, hitting a meter above the Sharkoi's fingers. Rhodes aimed lower, fired again. Bits of gray flesh splattered the floor as the shots tore chunks out. The warthog shuddered and started rolling through the bay. Elise perched on the bed with what could only approximately be called a pulse cannon, and held on as tight as she could. "Rhodes!" She swore at the driver to stop, unwilling to leave one of her team behind, though she knew he was right to leave. They had run out of time. 2 more engineers ran toward the door to join Rhodes. They carried knives and crowbars. This was insanity. Rhodes dropped to a knee and kept his rifle aimed right at the door. "Keep going!" he shouted in a shaky voice. The door buckled and flew forward. It struck one of the engineers, killing him instantly before it bounced on. 3 Sharkoi rushed into the bay. Rhodes stood in place and kept firing, right up until the moment one of the creatures took hold of him and swept him against a pillar in a spray of blood and concrete. The driver slammed on the accelerator as Elise desperately tried to get straps over the cannon and tie it into place. No time to wipe her tears away, or even look back at the thudding and crashing, as the Sharkoi continued Hecabe's relentless attempt to kill them all. Chapter 23. Melody crossed her fingers. If Tharz's fleet managed to stop the Sharkoi attack and turned this war against Hecabe around, she, Rajka, and the Spartans would likely be dead when the UNSC arrived. His Sangheili fleet, which only needed to hold off the attack for a short while before being able to fly once more, would come for him and kill with impunity. But they would have saved many, many lives. So every deep, hot, sandy breath out here felt so damn electric. It was another moment of life, but it might just be one of their last. "We begin," the Sangheili commander's voice said. "He sounds smug," Melody thought. "So smug." She watched the holographic image of tiny human ships hanging in the air over the blazing sandy desert as the device projected it in the center of the group. Rajka had slowly moved back to stand near the injured Thars, who leaned against a rock while holding out the hologrip in his hand. The Spartans kept their weapons ready and likely one eye on Thars, even though he did not look very mobile anymore. First wave, the Sangheili commander's disembodied voice informed them. Plasma leapt into the sky, rising inexorably toward the human fleet, striking and piercing ships at a distance. "We are successful, shipmaster. These humans are piloting barges. They are not made for war. We are swatting them out of the sky like flies." Melody watched the carnage. For a brief moment, hope fluttered up from under her ribcage. The Sangheili sounded so confident of their win as the human ships rose upward, exposing their bellies as they climbed higher. "Our drives are online," the commander shouted. "We will rise to meet them." "Wait. What? This is odd." "What's going on?" Melody asked, though part of her already knew it wouldn't be anything good. "There are," the commander began. "They..." Thars struggled to his feet, suddenly concerned and ignoring the flash of Rajka's energy sword as it pointed warningly toward his head. "Tell me what is happening. Tell me everything." The hologram shook. A new camera view materialized before them all, likely from one of Thars' own ships. The human ships aimed to get above their enemies, not trying to get close to them. They passed through the plasma fire, not even bothering to attempt evading the horrendous and steady barrage. Torn apart, vomiting debris, they now plunged toward the camera, evidently on suicide runs. "They cannot destroy all our ships that way," Thars protested. "This makes no sense." As the Sarakan ships fell through the fire, bursting apart from the Sangheili's anti-aircraft fire, large gray bodies launched from the human ship's hangar bays and plunged through the sky with uncanny speed, down toward the Sangheili ships. Thars' ships tried to take aim, but this was far more than the plasma could destroy. "There are hundreds of them," the commander hissed. "Sharkoi. They are truly the Sharkoi," another Sangheili officer said in the background, voice awed. Another shift took place as various cameras suddenly went offline. A view from the side of a cruiser. Sharkoi struck the ground. Many of them didn't move after impact, but enough survivors did. Lumbering to their feet, shaking their heads, they waded into battle with any Sangheili that approached them. Some Sharkoi managed to breach the Sangheili's hangar bays, led by a handful of Jiral Hanai with jump jets. Other Sharkoi landed atop the Sangheili ships, their wicked claws tearing at the sides of the hulls. "They are trying to rip their way in," the Sangheili commander reported, shocked. "This cannot be real!" "Destroy your slipspace drives," Thars screamed at the hologram. "Destroy your ships! Turn your weapons on each other before it is too late!" "You gave us orders not to," the commander shouted. "No, I was wrong," Thars replied. "Shipmaster!" The hologram shifted to the commander again so that he could see Thars face to face while on his bridge. Other Sangheili worked frantically in the background. "Do it!" The all-too-familiar form of a Sharkoi broke through a wall at the rear of the bridge and smashed into the commander. The Sangheili's body flew away limp, and the camera went offline. Thars dropped the projector in horror. Then he scrambled through the dust as it rolled away, shouting for anyone to listen. Melody felt sick. And then came a faint moment of relief. She would live for a while longer, as Thars had lost. But at what cost? Her worst fears had been realized. Hecabe and the Sharkoi are now able to get off-world. Rajka began to speak. "Thars,
You are a small-minded hatchling of little strategic ability.
Thars did not appear to even hear him, huddled over the sand in utter defeat.
Rajka took a step forward and continued. You were arrogant. You thought you could be Kaidan. But you did not properly secure this world. You acted before you had true strength over me, dooming your fleet and mine. You never had strength over Hecabe. You risked not just Rakoi, cousin, but all other worlds, even Sanghelios itself by your actions.
It was not I who released those things. I did not do this, Thars shouted.
You brought Hecabe here to do your fighting for you, and therefore it is you who bears the shame for it. You have failed, Thars. You have failed in every possible manner, and in all things.
Thars half twisted around in horror, struggling to get away as Rajka took another step forward and swung the energy sword into his cousin's neck. The strike, long and clean, was so fast that Melody saw it only as a blur. Melody held her hands over her mouth in shock.
I can't believe you did that.
Rajka snapped his energy sword off. Believe it.
She let out the gasp she'd been holding inside.
It doesn't matter, does it? We failed as well.
It is true. But today I saw my enemies perish before me. So I will carry that memory with me until it is my time to go, however long or short that time may be.
Rajka sounded pleased.
Though I had hoped Thars would give me a greater challenge than this.
Jai stepped forward. You'll get that from the Sharkoi and Hecabe. He pointed back toward Soraka, where smoke spilled above the distant horizon and lazily gathered in the sky. They still need Hecabe to control them, if they want to leave Kero.
We know where he is. We need a new plan.
Elise sat next to the pulse cannon latched onto the rear bay's floor as the Pelican swung out over the old desert sands. Only half her team had managed to escape. They were all strapped into the Pelican's jump seats now. The militia who'd picked them up were quietly staring out of the open bay door of the Pelican. Everyone appeared to be exhausted, not to mention covered in grime and blood. Then there were those people from her team left back in the tunnels as she and her group made their way to the evacuation point where the Pelican waited. So much death in the running retreat. Long lines of civilian evacuees passed under them and entered the underground corridors, which led through the adjacent mountain range to the wastelands beyond. This passage would provide them the cover they needed to escape the Sharkoi. Lamar had no doubt plans to rig them with proximity mines, which could take the entire mountain down on anything that got close. Elise gave the migration one last look as the Pelican leveled off and put the skyline behind it. Citizens fleeing on foot, carrying whatever they could into the old heat. There were pockets of militia running hunter-killer patterns against the Sharkoi, trying to draw them away from the evacuation. This would be a noble effort, but Elise doubted any would survive. They were basically playing the role of diversion while the hundreds of thousands of humans who could fled into the belly of the earth. Eventually, their luck would run out. They'll need to move quickly once they reach the other side. They won't survive long out in that environment, someone muttered over the comms. How long could she survive out there, though? Elise lived and worked in a major urban center. That was her life. She knew nothing about the desert, other than how nice it was to camp in or hike through. If they made it to the oases, they should be fine. But if they got caught out in the wasteland during a sandstorm, husbands, wives, children. Elise shook off the thought. That was Lamar's problem now. They're out in the open once they get past the eastern mountain. If he manages to locate them, Hecabe will herd them however he wishes. And kill them all, Elise said, in even more of a whisper. So our plan needs to work. She was going to have to swallow her pride and find more allies in the fight ahead. She couldn't do this alone. It was now up to Elise to get this makeshift weapon into the alien structure and end this once and for all. And for that, she needed Spartans. It would be risky. She had to take it, though. There was no way the handful of militia on this bird could last a second down there. "Found them," the pilot shouted. "They didn't disable the Pelican's beacon," which made this a hell of a lot easier. Lamar had been furious to find out the Spartans had requisitioned a Pelican for themselves. He hadn't even wanted to give Elise one. Every Pelican counted for the evacuation. Their own Pelican flared out and landed. Elise unbuckled herself and clambered out to the edge of the ramp. "Envoy! Spartans! Sang Healy! We need to talk." They'd watched the approach warily. Now the alien Kaidon, UNSC operative and Spartans trooped up the ramp of Elise's Pelican. There were fresh burn marks and chips on the Spartans' armor, but they were otherwise all still alive and functioning. Sangheili bodies littered the desert, and what looked like a Covenant dropship burned in the sand. "They've been busy," she thought. "Did you gain control of the fleet, Rajka Kasan?" Elise asked. Melody began to translate, but the Sangheili seemed to anticipate what she asked. He shook his head, causing Elise's heart to sink. Melody stepped forward. She was the worse for wear, Elise thought. Covered in dust and sand, and looking as tired as everyone else seemed to feel. "Tharz is dead, and the fleet has been lost. The only comms chatter we're getting from Tharz's camp, what's left of it at least, suggests that the Sharkoi and Jirohanai crew who survived are preparing the Sangheili vessels to attack Rak next. They're desperate to find more ships and get off this world." Elise took a deep breath, plans realigning in her mind. She might not have access to support from the air, but if Hecabe's stolen fleet was heading for Rak, they had an opportunity. And more specifically, they had time. "I want to stop Hecabe." She singled out the Spartan leader and directed her words at him. "Our militia is dying in the streets of Soraka, trying to hold back the Sharkoi so that civilians can get to safety. Everything we've got left is devoted to the evacuation. My vice governor and my advisors will not let me take resources away from that. There isn't much I can commit to an attack. So I need your help." The Spartans loomed large in the dark cabin of the Pelican. Elise couldn't tell if they were considering her offer or not, until their leader cocked his helmeted head. "What do you have in mind, Governor?" She pointed at the cannon. "We built an electromagnetic pulse cannon out of an M68 and a repurposed Havoc core. Based on all the data we culled off Hecabe during the siege, our chief engineers believe this machine will be powerful enough to disable the Forerunner device the Brute uses to control the Sharkoi. It's designed to fire a highly concentrated EM burst, which we believe will sever the Jirohanai's connection and make him vulnerable." "How sure are you that it works?" Melody asked, stepping forward and looking dubiously at the tangles of cables and power leads. Elise knew it looked like an unholy mess of random and probably dangerous parts at this point. The half-disassembled Havoc was welded onto the leg above the mount, and the Gauss cannon was slung out on a large metallic frame. "Sure enough that I'm going in with it," Elise said. "We designed it to be bolted onto a warthog or something that could move quickly if necessary. I need a team to support us during the attack. I need to get close enough to Hecabe to use it. And I need your help to do that." The female Spartan squatted down, leaning in close to the Havoc. "This is a suicide run," she said, sounding completely unconvinced. "We would be marching into the heart of Hecabe's fortified position to attack him directly, with all of those creatures in there with him. I know that, and I'll need to be with the machine, in case anything happens to it. That's why I came to you, Elise said, with one final effort to convince them. Spartans who've been living behind enemy lines for years in secret seem like the kind of operatives I need to get this thing close enough to Hecabe. I've lost good people to build this weapon. Are you a soldier willing to use it? Jai looked over from the jury-rigged electromagnetic pulse cannon to Mike. How's the engineering side of this? It looked like the mother of all railguns to him, only with more cables and some unconventional mount. And it still had a view screen. Not many handheld weapons came with readouts. I think there's a small chance it might just blow us all up when we fire it, Mike said. So if we do this, we need to make it count. We should make sure we're standing right next to Hecabe. Adriana? I want a second good shot, she said. Jai studied the governor one last time. She was trembling slightly. Not out of fear. Just too many stimulants. He wondered when she'd last slept. Could they trust something built by someone shaking like a detoxing drug addict? Probably not. But they didn't have a lot of other options at hand. Hecabe is burrowed deep down into the Forerunner structure at the center of the crater, Jai said. Last seismic readouts I saw indicated that it's a long straight shaft, 300 or so meters, and then it flattens out into a larger chasm. Beyond that, we've got nothing. Right now the crater is crawling with Sharkoi. We can't fight through everything down there. But we have the skies free. So we do an insertion drop. Fast, drop down the shaft, and pull chutes or jump jets just before impact. Then we move through the installation. No stopping or gawking. Can we fly a pelican with a warthog down there? Elise asked. The opening has been uncovered by Sharkoi already. No, need the airdrop, so that we're hard to hit. I'm not even sure a warthog would work well, Jai said. Do you have anything small and nimble that we can mount this weapon of yours to? Jackrabbit would work, Mike said. You have any of those? Elise thought about that. We did at one time. Lamar will be using them for the evacuation. I can try, but don't get your hopes up. Like I said, we don't have a wealth of assets anymore. Not ones I have access to. Everything has been leveraged to get people out of Soraka safely. If we can get one, this could work, Mike said. A low-altitude drop into the shaft. We go on foot, and I'll guide the bike in and drive it once we're inside. They're highly versatile. We can park and shoot it. It'll get to just about anywhere we need. It was a long shot, Jai thought. They all knew it. One small question, Jai said. How do we find Hecabe when we get inside? A Forerunner structure can be pretty vast, and the recon feeds we've seen go blank after they hit the bottom. We have sensor data that gave us information about Hecabe's electromagnetic activity. It's a signature we can track once we're inside. That's what this is for. She put her hand on the pulse cannon's display. It's built into the EMP weapon. But we're running out of time. We need to go now, before Hecabe's larger force returns from the desert and takes over the airspace around the crater. Otherwise we'll never get in.
I'll go as well, said Melody.
Adriana shook her head. You're not trained. I'm the one who freed you and almost died in the process. And I'm familiar with the site and what we're up against, more than anyone else here. You'll want me there. Rajka stepped forward and conferred with Melody. After listening, he spoke briefly in Sangheili to them all. Jai smiled as he heard the translation in his earpiece, and he gave the Sangheili a curt nod. Melody said to Elise, Rajka says he pledges himself to your battle against Hecabe and his Sharkoi. He adds that we will destroy him or die gloriously in our attempt. Jai looked around. A ragtag band of fighters and one cobbled-together EMP cannon running off a repurposed nuclear bomb. Okay. That makes six of us, he said. Let's do this. Chapter 24 Elise fumbled with the straps of the parachute as the Pelican flew low over Soraka's roads. She would be flying tandem with Jai. This thing opens automatically, right? If something happens to you, she asked him. No, it does not, Jai replied. He patted the ring on the strap against her shoulder. If anything happens to me, pull this as hard as you can once you enter the structure. Flex your legs right before you land on something. How do I steer? She asked. It's too late to show you now, Jai said. You shouldn't worry about it. If something happens to me with you this close, you'll probably be dead anyway. Elise flinched as the pilot flew them underneath a bridge. That's not as reassuring as you might think. Jai looked back at the bridge through the open ramp of the Pelican and the swaying jackrabbit magnetically anchored to the dropship's tail. Mike already sat inside, staring back at them. Jai ignored Elise's statement and continued. We're going to be just high enough that the Charkoi can't reach us, and low enough to get in before they can formulate a response. Plasma fire whipped down the steel and glass canyons of Soraka's skyscrapers toward their transport. The attack came from Jirohanai gun platforms that had been combing the streets, high above the Charkoi infestation. Elise held on to the Spartan as some of the plasma grazed them. The dropship shuddered, the pilot struggling for a second to get altitude and regain control as the jackrabbit swayed wildly. The vehicle faced backward, the larger rear single wheel hanging just above the Pelican's ramp. The yellow, single-pilot chassis of the jackrabbit shook, the two wheels on booms at the front bouncing slightly as another splash of plasma fire shook the Pelican. Usually a heavy gun sat over the rear wheel, but they'd replaced that with the significantly bulkier pulse cannon that Elise and her team had cobbled together. Elise had convinced Lamar to let go of one single ground vehicle for this operation. That was all they had. One jackrabbit and a crate of small arms and explosives. They had successfully rigged the vehicle with a pulse cannon and a chute, ready to be deployed once they reached the shaft. The installation process had gone smoothly. The Spartans seemed to be comfortable with the habit of regularly soldering guns onto things. The other concession Lamar had granted paced them in their wake. A second Pelican with an alternate squad of 8 Sorakan militia. Led by a Corporal Wise, Lamar had pulled them from running diversions in the streets to assist with the drop. Jet Wash kicked up debris on the street below as they raced on. Elise wrapped her hands around the straps and tightened her grip. She looked forward through the pilot's cabin again and saw the crater rapidly approaching. The female Spartan and the envoy would be jumping tandem, and the elite would go on his own. They were all making final preparations. Then we face Hecabe and his monsters. The Jirohanai chieftain had taken everything away from Elise. She wanted to rip everything away from him in return. She wanted him to see her rip it all away. For him to know, deep down, the same horror and helplessness she felt. Elise closed her eyes, her rage dancing in the flickers of light behind her lids. She was exhausted, but there were reserves of strength somewhere below, torrents of energy that now came to the fore. Their Pelican burst free of the cluster of buildings and screamed over the rim of the crater. Charkoi littered around the basin floor turned to face them as they passed overhead. Almost there. Get ready, Jai said to her. Her harness connected directly to him. Thanks to the Spartan's size, Elise felt like some kind of pack strapped to his back. Elise gripped her straps tightly as Jai climbed out of the Pelican's bay and onto the jackrabbit's frame. Nothing but air whipping past below her legs, the ground a blur far below. Her heart hiccuped, and she gritted her teeth. Jai, on the other hand, didn't seem at all bothered by the height, or the fact that the dropship was still racing forward as he casually maneuvered into position on the jackrabbit. Adriana, with Azikiwe strapped to her back, moved out of the Pelican's rear bay onto the other side of the jackrabbit. The Kaidan, Rajka, followed a moment later, climbing onto the bike's rear wheel and hanging onto a series of grips underneath the pulse cannon. Then the Pelican nosed straight up into the air. Elise was slammed into the jackrabbit's cage by the sudden climb. Below them, the crater fell away as the Pelican gained altitude. They were now right over the petal-like iridescent green opening to the alien's underground structure, which at this point looked like a small dark cavity. From this height, It looked far too small to drop into. 5. Jai reached up behind his helmet and tapped her shoulder and held up 5 armored fingers. 4. Elise closed her eyes and held her breath on 3. 2. 1. Go, Jai said out loud. There was a short metallic clank, and then they fell. Elise swallowed a scream as the wind struck her face and the jackrabbit tumbled, dizzying her as she opened her eyes and saw Crater, buildings, Jai, and the pelican whip end over end around her. She closed her eyes again. She opened them again just in time to see the pelican struck by plasma fire, its tail blown free by the blast. The second pelican had pulled the same maneuver, climbing up into the sky before releasing its passengers out of its back. Bodies tumbled out with arms and legs stretched out to control their descent. Corporal Weiss's militia joined them in the air, arms outstretched as they fell. Plasma bolts soared upward, but couldn't get a bead on the small targets, just as the Spartans had planned. Jai and Adriana pushed free from the jackrabbit, flying up behind it. Rajka followed suit. Mike and the bike plummeted toward the splayed forerunner pedals and the shaft at the center. Above, both the Spartans twisted in the air, controlling their descent. The pedals around the opening of the structure started slowly raising themselves off the ground to close back up into a tower. Even more plasma fire rose into the air around them. This time Elise could see the source. Jirohanai gunner positions stationed across the crater. The energy snapped and hissed around them. Elise screamed as one of the bolts zipped by, searing the air by her arm as she threw it up to protect her face. She pulled her arm away and looked back down. The shaft grew larger, even despite the closing pedals. A series of stairs and structures wound around its walls into the dark reaches below. Even as they rushed toward it at terminal velocity, it still looked too small to aim for. Elise had studied the scans of the structure and saw how much space was down there radiating out from around the central shaft. It was a vast series of underground caverns, and forerunner structures coiled throughout. The pedals were trying to snap shut before they dropped through the shaft. If they did, they would all be dashed against them, and it would be over in an instant. Hecabe sensed their approach, and was trying to react, no doubt. Then the hole grew wider, massive even, and the closing pedals rushed past in a sudden blur as they dropped through the center of the structure. Floors of blue-gray metal flew past her until Elise violently jerked to a stop. She smacked her head against the Spartan's armored back and spat blood. "You okay?" Jai asked. He and Adriana had deployed their own parachutes, as did the Sangheili, and then the jackrabbit followed suit, punching upward with a quick jerk as its canopy spread. The Spartans pulled at their cords, controlling their descent as they spiraled quickly inside the dark shaft in the middle of the structure.
"No, I'm not okay. But I'm alive," Elise said.
The jackrabbit hung slightly forward, favoring the twin booms connected to wheels. Mike swung around again, using his own weight to aim for one of what appeared to be descending ramps situated around the edges of the open bore, running down the middle of the structure. The jackrabbit bounced horribly as it landed, but appeared to survive the descent. Right before their own impact, Jai cut Elise free. She dropped to the ground at the base of the shaft. Adriana dropped Azikiwe to the ground and landed. Armor screeched against the floor as Adriana and Jai slid and came to a stop, severing the chutes and letting them blow into the shaft's interior wall.
"No Sharkoi. It's a quiet spot," Jai said. "They weren't expecting this stunt. But be ready, they'll be coming."
Elise reached for the pistol she had taken from the armory, unlatching its strap as she steeled herself for what lay ahead. The Sorakan militia came in hard next, one of them collapsing on impact. As squad leader and medic, Corporal Wise ran over and crouched by the soldier lying on the ground. She wadded the parachute under his head and ripped open a pants leg. The limb underneath had been completely shattered.
"Corporal?" Elise asked. "We can't carry anyone. This isn't that kind of mission."
Wise hit the man with a dose of painkillers and looked up.
"I know. I'm stabilizing him.
We need to find somewhere to try and hide him as best we can. Everyone deserves a chance to live. They dragged the injured soldier to a shadowed corner at the side of the shaft, then readied their weapons and followed Wise behind the first group. Elise walked along the back of the jackrabbit, checking the pulse cannon over, looking for any damage from the landing. So far, so good. She breathed relief. Sharkoy, Rajka called out from ahead, the word recognizable to all of them. He stood upslope, looking out across a large chasm with an ambient red light filtering upward. His body language was clear. Impatience. He was ready to fight, and Elise couldn't really blame him. She wanted this to be over more than anyone else. Mike spun the jackrabbit around toward Rajka. Jai grabbed onto the vehicle's frame, locked into position next to Mike.
Ready? Mike asked. Adriana pulled herself onto the other side of the vehicle, holding on as the jackrabbit edged forward. She had a sniper rifle magnetically anchored to her back, and a battle rifle in one hand at the ready.
One good shot is all we need, she said softly.
The metal ramp under them trembled with the sound of even larger feet thundering their way. Hop on back, Jai said, offering Elise a hand. She climbed up behind him, holding onto his armor with her hands and her foot lodged into a groove on the bike. The vehicle moved methodically into the cavern, and Elise peered out across a vast bridge slung over a lava pit. Then a Sharkoy came around the bend. Jai looked down the chasm as Mike gunned the jackrabbit around a corner and onto a bridge. The chatter of a rifle echoed back down from where they'd come, followed by three explosions. Jai glanced back. The injured soldier they had left behind hadn't been able to remain hidden, or had chosen not to. That was the sound of his last stand. The rest of the squad sprung around with only a few pained glances around them, weapons trained forward as they all proceeded across the large bridge.
"The Sharkoy arrive!" Rajka shouted, Jai's earpiece translating.
"Hecabe has found us," said Mike over the comm.
"Remember, watch out for synchronized behavior. They fight as one, not individuals."
Two Sharkoy bounded directly across the bridge at them. Adriana leapt from the jackrabbit and pulled out her sniper rifle. Two direct shots, and the lead Sharkoy slowed. It stumbled and fell to its hands and knees. Blood and brain matter leaked onto the bridge floor. Still it fought to drag itself toward them. Rajka lunged for the other Sharkoy's limbs. The energy blade flashed in the gloomy light as Rajka sliced the creature's arms free of its body. It roared as it struggled to get its footing and fight Rajka. The Sangheili instead kicked the creature in the back, forcing it over the edge of the bridge and down toward the lava below. The half-dead Sharkoy on the ground crawled painfully on its hands and knees. Rajka now walked over to it. He leaned down to glare at it.
"We are coming for you, Hecabe," he roared. "We are coming!"
He drove his sword into the creature's skull.
"Not as heavily defended down here," Adriana said. "Most of the Sharkoy are outside and above us. I don't think Hecabe expected that we would jump right into the hole like this."
"Who would?" Jai asked, stepping from the side of the jackrabbit. Elise and Azakiwe followed as they warily walked across the bridge and toward a series of large towers that came into view. Rajka slipped back to a position on their left. "Hecabe knows only violence and trickery, not general strategy. We shall use this to our advantage. We will attack the human way." Jai wasn't sure if that was intended as a compliment or as an insult. Mike braked to a stop as they reached the center of the bridge that spanned the dull blaze of liquid rock below. The glint of fire reflected off distant walls. Jai looked back to Elise.
"Governor, where next?"
She climbed up onto the back of the jackrabbit and looked at a screen strapped to its frame.
"Deeper. If something happens to me, know you need to just keep going deeper."
"If we get too much farther, we'll end up pretty warm," Mike shouted. "In case you didn't notice all the lava."
"I see the lava," Jai said as they continued crossing the bridge. "I also see the Sharkoy waiting for us."
50 gray forms waited for them at the end of the bridge, where an island of earth held a forerunner structure comprised of a large wall, towers, and an opened gateway. And far more Sharkoi than that now thundered down the shaft's spiraling ramps, corkscrewing along the walls rising above them all. The creatures poured in from the surface in a landslide of Hecabe's will that would bury them soon enough, Jai thought. Rajka paused as the Spartans stopped in the middle of a bridge. Standing on the shallow apex of the bridge, Rajka could see the enemy Sharkoi waiting for them at the end. This forerunner fortification must have been where the governor's scans located Hecabe. Jai stepped aside to ask the human governor something. She looked across the bridge toward the structure and shook her head. "Why have we paused?" Rajka asked the Spartans. "The closer we get to the device and to Hecabe, the more impact the cannon will have," Jai said, walking back. "The governor says we're not close enough yet." "Then it is my time," Rajka announced. He had known this would come. "Spartans, we must surround and trap Hecabe." "What?" Melody looked at him, then back at the wall of Sharkoi at the end of the bridge. "We are the ones surrounded, Rajka." "If you live," Rajka shouted at her as he moved down the bridge toward the waiting Sharkoi. "Speak of my bravery. I want my bloodline to add it to their battle poem." "What are you going to do?" Melody asked. "I will be the spear of our assault," Rajka told her. He pulled his energy sword, but didn't activate it yet. "Wait until you see me scatter them in confusion. Then you will know it is time to press your own attack." Rajka ran ahead in a dead sprint. He knew the Sharkoi could tell he was coming. Echolocation would track his movement. He launched down the bridge, leaving the others behind. It felt good to run and stretch his legs far out, ready to kill, to hunt. These creatures were not to be feared. Rajka would pass them like a whirlwind. Would Hecabe be able to trap him eventually? Possibly. But not before Rajka got close enough. Not before Rajka tied up Hecabe's attention on his own suicidal attack. As Rajka approached the end of the bridge, the Sharkoi retreated toward a dais at the very front of the Forerunner structure's entrance. There were towers behind the large wall. It was a strange keep, certainly a fortress of some kind, Rajka thought. And through the entry and beyond the wall, he saw his Jiral Hanai enemy, gravity hammer at his side. Hecabe waited inside the structure, surrounding himself with Sharkoi like a wall. Still visible pieces of the Forerunner machine coiled inside his head reflected the cavern's light. Sharkoi jumped from one and two levels above Rajka down to the base of the bridge, abandoning some kind of perch at the top of the towers. Apparently, Hecabe took this sudden soul threat against him rather seriously. "Hecabe!" Rajka screamed, snapping on his energy sword. "Hecabe, I am here!" It was madness, of course. 10 Sharkoi moved directly in front of him with incredible speed. Alone, Rajka stood no chance. But Rajka fought to be remembered, for his honor, and to give this strange team of allies he stood with a chance to kill Hecabe and save countless worlds. The Sharkoi charged, and the Sangheili met them in kind. As he struck the first beast, sword flaring brightly, Rajka heard the human's vehicle roar and gunfire chatter as the team rushed down the bridge after him. Dropping low to the ground, Rajka slashed his sword through yielding Sharkoi flesh that sizzled as he cut the trunk-like legs off at the knees. The creature's large claws snapped through the air over his head. 2 of the Spartans joined the attack, their armored boots stomping the stone floor as they landed nearby. Rocket-propelled grenades from 2 militia soldiers exploded around him, and the death cries of Sharkoi filled his ears. Maybe Hecabe was taken off guard by the direct attack. Maybe the Jiral Hanai was being defensive, doing his best to keep a wall between him and the Spartans who had already nearly dealt him a mortal blow. Either way, The creatures seemed to scramble to deal with a swarm of enemies around them. A Spartan engaged one of the Sharkoi off to Rajka's side. The demon dodged the creature's blow near the ledge, throwing it off kilter. It swung around and threw the Sharkoi over the side and into the lava below. No ammunition wasted as they ran toward the dais. Far behind them, at the other end of the bridge, the remaining human soldiers struggled to slow the Sharkoi rushing down from the rear. They had brought the heaviest of their infantry weapons to deal with these monsters. But the humans fell one by one, inexorably. All they really could do was buy the Spartans time. Time to get the vehicle and its cannon further down along the bridge, without the Sharkoi destroying it. The floor around Rajka shook. Sharkoi streamed out of the towers and the walls that enclosed them. Dozens more emerged from the majestic alcoves that shimmered with blue energy. This must have been where the Forerunners had kept them all these thousands of years. Rajka fought like a demon himself, jumping, diving, weaving for his life, for all their lives. He was drawing the Sharkoi into a close-quarters battle where they were forced to fight against their numbers, often damaging each other with their great size and powerful blows. Here, in the thick of their mob, their great strength was turned against them. Four Sharkoi lay dead by Rajka's hand as he pierced the protective wall of creatures, and now Hecabe himself stood just a few bounds away, just through the Forerunner wall. Hecabe turned his attention from Rajka to the humans, and then back again. Without warning, a Sharkoi slammed into Rajka before he could get inside, throwing his body across the ground toward the lava pit. Rajka's sight blurred, and the world darkened as he momentarily blacked out from the intensity of the strike. Instinctively, he jammed the blade of his sword into the cavern's floor as he tumbled toward the edge. His weapon snapped free from his hand. But Rajka caught the ledge just as he slid over, nearly falling to his death. He glanced over his shoulder at the lava below him, then pulled his way back up and rolled to the right. As his vision returned, he paused for a moment to assess the battle. His gambit had worked. Hecabe had pulled the Sharkoi to himself in a protective reflex. That had given the Spartans and human militia time to get down here. The Sharkoi's concentrated numbers actually played to the Spartans' advantage, making the smaller and nimbler targets difficult to kill. But as Rajka watched, a Sharkoi fell from the air and struck the front of the small human vehicle as it moved toward the base of the bridge. Sparks and flames erupted from its front end as the one called Mike leapt free, rolled to the side, and shot the creature at point-blank range. The beast reeled backward and fell over the side of the bridge. The governor ran up to the pulse cannon from her safe position behind the vehicle, where she and the envoy had remained during the battle. Jai and Adriana darted back to join her, providing cover fire as Sharkoi pressed toward their position. Rajka looked back toward Hecabe, still within the Forerunner walls. Dozens of new Sharkoi flowed around him, coming from the base of another cylindrical tower at the very heart of the Forerunner structure. They poured out of the front gate. Overhead, more of the creatures began to leap from ramps and bridges connecting the towers high above them. They would fall for hundreds of meters, then strike the bridge as living bombs. Each impact jostled everything on the bridge as the creatures landed with deafening thuds. Rajka wondered how long the bridge could hold under such duress. The governor and the Spartans reached the burning vehicle at the same time. The small human machine had held their best hope to stop Hecabe. Now, it looked irreparably damaged. Rajka roared in frustration and returned his focus to the Jirohanai and the muscled wall of gray surrounding him. "It is time to die with honor," Rajka shouted. He leapt at the Sharkoi, his eyes fixed only on Hecabe behind them. Chapter 25. Elise skidded to a stop next to the wreckage of the jackrabbit. She climbed onto its back to examine the weapon. "Keep pushing it forward," she screamed at the Spartans. Sharkoi bodies struck nearby, gore exploding across the bridge, each strike shaking the entire structure to its moorings. The further they got toward the Forerunner Towers and Hecabe, the harder it would be for the falling Sharkoi to hit them. Jai grabbed the two wrecked front booms of the Jackrabbit and lifted the vehicle up. He started pushing it as Elise shoved damaged pieces of equipment aside and tried to figure out if the cannon could still work. Adriana and Mike provided cover, unleashing a torrent of fire at encroaching Sharkoi.
"The cannon?" Adriana asked, walking backward with them.
"I don't know. I don't know," Elise muttered, her mouth dry.
The Sharkoi had hit the front of the Jackrabbit. The back had snapped up into the air and remained there, the frame bent. Mike had kept the Sharkoi from doing any more damage, but it may have been too late. She watched the readout run through a quick self-assessment as she also hurriedly checked the wiring.
"It has power. It's functional."
"It will take too long to push it closer," Jai said, turning back to her. He stepped forward and grabbed the mount. He ripped it slowly free from what was left of the vehicle. She could hear his power armor groan under the stress. Then the shriek of metal as the weapon tore free from the back of the Jackrabbit. The Spartan hoisted it above his shoulder to awkwardly carry the massive cannon, its framing hanging by his chest and waist. This was a death trap, if the enemy got close enough.
"Let's go, Governor," he said,
voice strained as he thudded forward. Adriana and Mike fell in before him to provide cover, and Azakiwe trailed behind with a battle rifle raised. The Sharkoi had congregated around the Forerunner structure that held Hecabe, evidently attempting to protect the chieftain from Rajka, who they could no longer see in the forest of gray bodies. Elise glanced behind to see her fellow Sarakans had fallen back to the top of the bridge, which was now covered in viscera from the falling Sharkoi. The militia was attempting to stop Sharkoi from getting across the bridge. Corporal Wise was bent over one of the few remaining squad members. Her hands dripped with blood as she tried to stop him from bleeding out. But the soldier pulled free to load a rocket-propelled grenade and fired it into the stampeding mass of Sharkoi coming toward them across the bridge. One of the alien beasts reached the squad. It mercilessly grabbed for Wise, claws ripping through her stomach and yanking her away from the wounded soldier. He managed to reload again and fired at it. But a second Sharkoi crossed the distance to join the slaughter. It kicked his head in, the gore splattering against the gray hide of its thick feet. Elise swallowed bile, wondering how many of the Sharkoi from the surface Hecabe had recalled to his position. Looking up, she saw more coming down the shaft's side and making their way to the bridge by the second. She patted her side for the pistol she'd been given, but couldn't pull it free. She realized she couldn't fumble around with the weapon if she also needed to help with the pulse cannon. She hurried to keep up with Jai. When she looked back behind her, all she could see were Sharkoi on the top of the bridge. With her and the envoy at the rear, the Spartans pushed on, battling Sharkoi that broke forward from the huddle around Hecabe. Behind that, deeper into the Forerunner Citadel, more chaos erupted as other Sharkoi massed to try and stop Rajka from getting close to Hecabe. Seeing even more of the creatures spilling out of the towers behind them left Elise feeling dazed.
"There are so many."
The entire cavern shook with the thunder of feet. Open combat and Sharkoi falling onto the span from above, many of them killing their own kind in mindless sacrifices. Rajka, now surrounded by Sharkoi himself, saw the Spartans approach and howled defiance in words that Elise could not understand.
"Rajka is right," Jai said, dropping to a knee with the cannon. "This is as close as we get to Hecabe. Governor Elise, fire it!"
Time felt like it slowed to a halt. And everything went silent, like a dream, as Elise scrambled up to Jai's side and the jury-rigged cannon's controls. He had sighted the Gauss cannon aimed straight through the entrance at Hecabe, who was screened by a shifting, muscular wall of Sharkoi that he only occasionally appeared through. A mist of purple blood burst over them as another Sharkoi struck the ground nearby, knocking four other creatures off the ledge and into the lava below. Out of the corner of her eye, Elise saw yet another one just miss entirely and fall past the edge. A column of yellow and red magma rose from the surface with the impact, spilling across the bridge.
"Governor!"
Melody shouted from behind her, panic clear in her voice. Elise returned her focus to the readout. She could sense that the Sharkoi were close.